Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for October 22nd, 2007, and on this episode, we have an interview with Doug Peck, the musical director of I Do, now playing at the American Theater Company. You'll be talking to Tom Williams in an in-depth interview, and he has a lot to say about musical direction, not only with American Theater Company, but with many other notable companies he's worked for as well. Doug Peck also performs in I Do, so you really want to check out this interview to get some in-depth information about this show. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. My guest this week is a first. We have a music director, a young man who is, in a short period of time, has done quite a bit. Say hello to Doug Peck.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening.
All right. And Doug, tell us about the show that you are the music director for and you perform in. I Do at American Theater Company, at ATC.
I have the great pleasure right now of sharing American Theater Company's stage with the brilliant Heidi Kettenring and Steph Tovar. Michael Weber and I reconceived the piece as a Chicago-specific piece, specifically set updating the time frame into the 1950s to the present, tracing the journey of people who would be my grandparents' age or the age of the parents of many of our viewers, to follow them in a specific Chicago context through their childhood, their courtship, their marriage, their childbirth, their raising of their children, their eventual retirement to Florida. I Do, of course, is based on the Four poster. On Broadway, it originally starred Robert Preston and Mary Martin. And we've really tailored it both to sound and look and feel like a Chicago piece and also to be very specific to Heidi and Steph, who are such great artists. A piece like Flaming Agnes, you could say, has gotten the most transformation. It was originally a strippery ragtime number from Mary Martin, and we've made it a go-go beat number that quotes Maud and quotes the Mary Tyler Moore Show, to give away two of the obvious musical quotes in that number. And it just lets Heidi light the stage on fire. Something that I love about the production is that we're doing it without amplification.
Yes.
I got to do that for the first time at Timeline last season.
Yes. You did that with Fiorello.
With Fiorello, which was so great. And we'll talk about this later. But when we do Carousel at the Court this spring, we're going to try to do that without amplification as well. I think being immediately attached to the human voice is so powerful, so dramatic. I also get to share the space with a tremendously talented female pianist named Sandy Lind. There is a two-piano arrangement of I Do, but we did not use that. That's very much rooted in the original musical idiom, which sounds very ragtimey, very stride and strut piano style. In updating the piece, I actually didn't use that at all.
So tell us now what a music director does, and specifically what you did for this piece, because there was obviously an existing music for it.
Absolutely.
And it's been done with orchestras, mm-hmm. and you guys did it with two pianos.
What a musical director is depends on the theater you're working in. A lot of my work happens at the Marriott Lincolnshire, where there's a tremendous staff. They have a resident musical supervisor, Patty Garwood, who conducts the shows. They have an orchestrator, Dave Siegel, who orchestrates the shows. And my job is to, in a theater like that, to teach the cast their music and to oversee that process of setting tempos, making cuts, making sure that the music fits into the dramatic piece as a whole. It's different, say, than a conductor in an opera. In an opera, even as stage directors start to take over that industry a little bit, the conductor sets the pace, sets the dynamics, and sort of governs the performance. I'm an accompanist type of musical director. I do a lot of vocal accompaniment and believe that the music should always follow the demands of the drama. So it's a collaborative job. You really listen to what the director, and if there is one, the choreographer, are doing, and make sure that the music matches that. In a job like I Do here at American Theater Company, I am all of those people at once. So it's a busy job, but it's a very rewarding job. At a place like the Marriott, I don't wind up playing the show, so it's a process of communicating my musical ideas to someone else.
So this one, it kind of feeds all your creative.
Absolutely. I get
because you look like you're having fun playing too.
I do have fun.
And you are a terrific pianist.
Thank you. It's easier to play the long hour piano days that I have to play if I play with all of my energy. People who watch me always comment that they can watch me while I'm playing. I'm not just stiff, but I'm moving around. I'm emoting. I had a little bit of background as an actor, which I'm very grateful for because I understand how to talk to actors. I understand what their process is, how to guide them in that in a way that some other just pure musicians might not.
Yeah, that when you're also a vocal coach too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that all ties in. So you did original arrangements for this show?
That's right. Both of the vocals, which are different in some cases, of my piano book as first pianist, and then the book that Sandy Lynn plays is completely a new book of original material.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And you adapted them. When you do this, you adapt them to the talent you have, to Steph and to...
Always. Always, always, always. And, you know, with our understudies, we have two tremendously talented understudies who are doing some publicity events. And, you know, I don't want to say God forbid, but knock on wood, they won't have to go on. But if they do, I'd let them do their own thing. We would change a key if we need to. We'd tailor an arrangement to them. We perform things well when they're specific to us. And this, again, comes from my classical background of if you're a classical singer, you want to sing the cadenza that shows off your voice the best. And I think musical arrangements work the same way.
Well, maybe that's one of the keys why you've been so successful is because sometimes you go to shows and you see music direction or the conductor, and you can't help but hear the singers are fighting the band. And sometimes you think maybe it's the piece, and then you all of a sudden you realize that something's wrong. Like, I don't know technical ends of music. I can't say it's the wrong key. Or, you know, I don't know why it's wrong. I just know it's wrong.
It doesn't feel right. It doesn't
sound right. Or you can feel a frustration. Or at a time when she's singing low, the horns are, or whatever, you know, it's just
right.
Totally wrong.
An interesting thing about producing this piece at American Theater Company without microphones, the actors are facing away from us most of the time.
Yes, they are.
So I had to be very trustworthy of both my director, Michael Weber, and my choreographer, Laura Scheinbaum, who's a friend, to trust them in previews of saying, it feels like I'm playing too loud, but to the audience, it feels right. Ordinarily, that's the work that some of the really gifted sound designers I work with, they would do that. But here, the actor is their own sound designer, and it's our job to listen to them and tell them, ooh, that is just a little too quiet. Or sometimes with a voice as big as Heidi Kettenring's, you don't have to sing that loud. The theater is not that big. It'll fill it with just your spoken voice.
She certainly did it. And I thought the blend worked because I'm the old school. If you can get away without being amplified,
absolutely,
I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the problem with that, as I'm sure you as a vocal coach know, is that the real young kids all think they have to be mic'd. And that's my other pet peeve. I can't hear them half the time. Or if they turn slightly away, you could be 5 feet away and not hear them. I guess it's the projection or, you know, it's not just volume, but it's part of that you know, knowing how to sell a song.
There's a moment from an opera production that I saw that I'll never forget of Deborah Voigt on stage at the Lyric and Ariadne of Naxos. And she started facing away from the audience and you heard her crystal clear.
Wow.
And as she turned her head towards the audience, it got even louder. And I teach that when I'm working with my musical theater students of projecting out of your whole head, using your back for support, using just the tremendous amount you can. Of course, when you have a microphone, you can rely on it. But you're right, you can't, as a young singer, learn only to work with a microphone. It tends also for you not to get a job in an audition because we audition without a microphone. So sometimes some of the best mic voices, we won't even turn our heads or take a note on at an audition.
Well, I've told a couple of people that. I said, you know, if all things equal, if you go to auditions and they can hear you, you can project, that's got to be in your favor. And
I'm absolutely
glad. Thanks for verifying that, because I've suggested that, because, you know, when you singing is all about, you want to hear them. I mean,
absolutely,
that's, you know, and they have to sell the song. But I tell you, what you guys have with the pros you have at ATC is perfect. The show is terrific.
Thank you.
It's got a lot of heart to it. And musically, I remember it when Paula and John did it for Mark Robin. I don't know if you were around.
I didn't get to see it, but I'm sure they were brilliantly talented in that.
Yeah, they were. And I thought it worked because they were more middle-aged.
Sure.
But to have two younger people do it and to be able to age gracefully like the show does, I thought they handled it.
The piece kind of sends us that message because in the end, no matter what production you do, they send you the message that you're supposed to put the old age makeup on stage, which is letting you know that the age is a theatricality. Of course, there's great stories of people in their 70s playing the youth of the piece, but we thought in such a small theater, and Chicago has a vibrant energy to it, having young people play older for our production would serve really well.
Yeah, and
two top people.
Absolutely.
Like Steph is such a terrific actor.
He is, and he's an underrated singer.
Yeah, he did a better job on it. I didn't picture him as a singer, but I thought he nailed
absolutely
some of the emotion.
We actually wound up raising a lot of the keys for Steph because they're written for Robert Preston, so bass baritone. Steph has a beautiful tenor voice, so he took some things into his range.
Yeah, and of course Heidi's one of my favorite
people.
Me too. I think she is one of the. I think she's our all around best leading lady in town, and that's tough to say. If you take all categories, because she can act, she can sing, she can dance, she's beautiful. She's a great comic.
Absolutely.
And some of the comedy in this show, I mean, she pulls off some good stuff.
Heidi's someone that the minute we met, we did a production of Guys and Dolls at Court Theater together,
right.
And we just the minute we met had the exact same musical instincts, the exact same sense of phrasing, of dynamics. We follow each other beautifully, and with her, we don't need to set everything. You know, 3 weeks into a run, if she starts to go in one direction, I'll follow her, or if I get a new idea one day, she'll follow me, and we don't even have to talk about it.
Is that right?
Just a really great sensation to play together.
Well, when I remember her at Marriott when she played Fanny Rice and Funny Girl. And then the next show, she was at Theater at the Center doing Patsy Cline. And I said, how can you go from doing one to the other? And then she went right into her Tennessee draw. She said, I'm from Tennessee.
Right. That's one of the things I love about this town is the versatility of our actors. You take someone like Paula Scrofano, who's going to play Hello Dolly, and then she'll play Marmee in Little Women. You can't imagine Carol Channing and Maureen McGovern switching those parts out. But our
true.
Chicago people are so versatile; they know how to do that.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's. The show is at American Theater Company, which is at 1909 West Byron. What days do you...
We run Thursday through Sunday. And for some of the people in the business, we have an occasional Wednesday student matinee that if you ask real nice, you can probably get into as well.
Oh, great. Yeah because we have a lot of theater people that the young kids. And folks, this is a show to see. You want to see how to do a two-person show and how to sing without microphones. And I think the music that you guys came up with, I think the score sounded, a little more lush, and yet you did it with two pianos.
Yeah, thank you.
What's the key to that?
We augmented a lot of chords, and we took things, it's a score that's written very much in the middle octaves of the piano, and we took things either lower or higher for both of us as pianists, and that just makes it more filled out. We've also just kind of, the way we play it passionately and beautifully with more dynamic contrast than they originally had lends it that sense.
Okay. And it's kudos to Michael Weber for getting Jones and Schmidt to agree to the change. I think
Absolutely. Updating
it to Chicago really added a lot. The video projections.
Mike Tutai is a brilliant projection designer.
He is. He's one of the best. Yeah. It's just a fun show. And congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well, I see you're up now for a couple of Jeff Awards coming up.
I am.
You
it's always
be excited.
Nice to be mentioned,
yeah.
Of course.
I mean, Shenandoah at Marriott was one of the best shows. And All Night Strut, it's just showing your versatility.
Absolutely. And one of the great things about working at the Marriott is they give me some really challenging pieces to do. And I always love when I see the seasons announced what pieces they think of me for. And that was a cool season to get those two. All Night Strut was another show that was done originally, and we did it completely differently.
Yeah, it's actually a new show.
It absolutely was. Mark Robin and Aaron Thielen had the genius to think of different ways of doing it. It was originally for four Manhattan Transfer-esque singers, and we kept that as the core, but added swing dancing and clowns and flying and just the kitchen sink of different musical styles. And my job as musical director was to work with a team of not one, but five orchestrators, myself included, and the whole orchestra and Patty Garwood, as well as the directors and the five choreographers to make a cohesive musical whole.
And you did. And when I saw the credits, I remember I was there, and of course I know it's a Mark Robin show, it's going to be good.
Right, of course.
You just know that.
He's the best.
But you're looking and you're seeing how many cooks there are, and you wonder what the stew's going to taste like. And it was amazing. It was a tremendous show. People were very impressed.
It was an exciting first orchestra rehearsal. That's part of the process. You know, we rehearse with just the pianos in the rehearsal room, and then we have a rehearsal usually at the Marriott on a Monday where we just rehearse with the orchestra for the first time and fix notes and styles and tempos. Then we add the cast in, and then there we are 2 days later in front of a first audience.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, because it's a year-round theater at Marriott, the short rehearsal time,
it's
how they create these fabulous shows in like 10, 12, 14 days. I mean, it's amazing. And that's all. You only have
one
couple,
one day of orchestra rehearsal, one day of orchestra with cast, and already you're in previews.
Wow.
So, I mean, obviously it's some of the best union musicians you can find are playing out there. It wasn't until that orchestra rehearsal where we knew that we'd achieved that musical whole. We thought, you know, farming out to six orchestrators, it could sound like, you know, one is by not from an opera, one's from a hip hop CD, and it's not going to mesh. And we heard that rehearsal. We knew that we had something.
Yeah. And well, congratulations on that. And Shenandoah was just a marvelous production.
Absolutely.
It was, I mean, it's one of the great films, and a lot of people think it's one of the best shows Marriott's ever done. I think it's up there.
Again, that's a piece. In the rehearsal room, we thought it was going very well. And then once we got in this tremendously atmospheric set design and to see it under the lights and with the orchestra, we got to do some real country-flavored orchestrations for
that. Yes, you did, yeah.
Which was really exciting.
Banjo,
to do.
Banjo, guitar.
All of that was in there. We took out the piano. And having, you know, Abby and Jesse Mueller up there singing as sisters, a real duet of sisters, and my friend David Hess in the lead. It just
he
got
fabulous.
More thrilling towards
opening.
Well,
he's opening. Up for an award, and I think he better clean off a spot on his mantle.
He deserves it. He's such a talented guy.
But you also won a Citation Award for Fiorillo, which I got to tell you this. Fiorillo, I saw the original version.
Oh, my goodness.
16 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, he was such an idealistic. It really made an impression on a young Irish Catholic kid from Chicago. And no one's ever done it after. And I was nagged. It's a perfect show for Marriott.
Absolutely. And, you get a guy with great personality in that role.
Yeah. And we've been pushing for that show for a long time. And then when Timeline did it, I said, my. And they were scared to death to do it because they don't do music. And you know, they had everything to lose because their dramatic plays are as good as anybody's.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're in a class with Writers or Cord or any of them. And that was a big risk.
It's all to the tribute of the vision of Nick Bowling, who just believed in that piece. Like you, it's been with him his whole life, and he's always known it and always wanted to do it. And he convinced first Timeline to do it. Then he convinced P.J. Powers to star in it.
P.J. wouldn't play it.
P.J. had never done a musical before.
Right. And he told me, he says, you talk about afraid. He says they had, no matter how many people they auditioned, of course they were limited because they're not equity and they weren't going to go equity.
We saw a lot of guys PJ was always in the back of our minds to do it. And of course we're remounting Fiorillo this year.
Yeah.
Which I'm so excited. Timeline's actually snagged a couple equity contracts for starting with that production.
Oh, good.
Hopefully to bring back at least one of our leading ladies. Cross your fingers for Rebecca Finnegan to be back. Which is
yeah, she's now great. Equity now, right?
She is.
Well, good. It's about time they make that step. And then it gives you the flexibility of casting, too.
Absolutely.
Now, that had to be a challenge for you because, again, that was not mic'd.
Nope.
And they were up, but they were up on, they were on several levels.
Yes,
in a big L shape. Where were you? I can't remember now.
We were at the back of the space, and we weren't mic'd either.
Right.
So it was balance-wise. It took a couple previews to figure out, especially with drums back there and a live piano back there, how do we play in such a way that it travels to the audience, but it doesn't overtake the singers?
Yeah, especially the percussion can do that.
Absolutely.
I know a lot, they're using these plastic things now that tends up. Because I hate when I go to shows and they have a nice combo and all you hear is the drums.
The drums.
Yeah. And the singers, again, are fighting over the drums.
Right. A great part of Fiorillo to me, and you know, Sheldon Harnick saw the show and collaborated with us.
Oh, he did?
And he will be collaborating with us even more this time. And my dear friend Bethany Thomas played the role of Mizzy.
Right.
That was actually Mitzi originally with Eileen Rodgers as a kind of Charleston song. And I rearranged it for Bethany to be a Ma Rainey, Ethel Waters kind of song with a huge ending. And
she's terrific.
And it was Sheldon's favorite part of the show, so that was a great honor both to me and to her that we changed something that much, and he loved it. So
that's great, and boy, for a young guy to get the chance to work with all these people,
the best.
Yeah, did you get to meet Jones or Schmidt for this show?
I have not for this show. I'm still holding out that I'll get to
because they come in and see a lot. I know they've Bill Polinsky told me they'd worked with him on
absolutely.
Several productions. Yeah,
my favorite person that I got to meet this year, of course, was Mr. George Hearn.
Yes,
on the
Let's
Most Happy Fella
that.
At Ravinia.
One of the great nights of theater.
It felt like that being up there. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it was, what a production. Cast. How many in the orchestra did you?
There were 45 of us.
45.
And for me, as a person who's continually reducing things for, you know, 3-person ensembles, 5-person ensembles, 10-person ensembles, that's 45 people. And I got to be up there playing keyboards, conducted by Maestro Eric Kunzel, up there with some of the best musicians in Chicago. And as a person who's still a big opera fan as well as a theater fan, having a diva like Sylvia McNair alongside George Hearn, it was just mind-blowing. And to be an equal with them and to be directing them was a great sense of accomplishment for me.
Yeah, how do you do that? I mean, how do you tell them, you know, like if they're screwing up, you know, this young guy. And you're
easy. It's the kind of thing where you're in the car the morning of and you think, how am I going to do it? And then you just start and you're doing it. So I got to have 3 days in a rehearsal room with just me and the two of them where we got to hone the score and shape the score before staging even started. And those are three of my favorite days of my whole career.
Well, And I would imagine you were probably a little reluctant, but you know the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
And they knew you knew the right thing. So Absolutely. It was an instant respect thing.
Well, exactly. And the minute you give a note that they hadn't thought of or a note that they knew they needed to be given, you get that right away. Also, they got the sense, I hope, that I was guiding them towards their best possible performance, the best they could ever do it. So that's a great sense of direction from an actor, that they feel like they're doing their best. They're going to want to keep achieving mm-hmm. your guidance.
I mean, if they thought you were wrong, these people were wrong. They had no problem to tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that had to be a confidence builder too.
You know it. Absolutely.
Well, I thought that was a fabulous. And as we were talking earlier, it's just too bad great performances didn't record that, because it was one of the great nights. And I've seen almost all their productions. That one would, you know, that they would have
just musically alone. I would love to have a recording of that, but of course it's illegal. So.
Yeah, musically and what Mark did with the staging. I mean, he used that entire gigantic stage in that one dance number that was
the
just
Big
fabulous.
D number. Tons of dancing up there. I love working with Mark because a lot of people first know me from my work at Court Theater with the brilliant Charlie Newell, and the productions we do, they're always rooted in theatricality, and as of yet, we haven't really included dance as an idiom. So working with Mark is always exciting because I know I'll get to work with the finest dancers and the finest choreographer.
Yeah. Mark's up, a Tony Award. He's just waiting.
It's
once
coming.
Once he gets a Broadway show, that's all he needs.
It's guaranteed.
Yeah,
he
agree.
He provides the highest entertainment value. For Carousel, though, we're working with my friend Randy Duncan, who previously collaborated with at Appletree on Hello Again. Mm-hmm. And he's going to really bring dance to Court Theater, a very stylized form of dance. Carousel, of course, the Agnes DeMille choreography is brilliant.
Yes.
And we want to take our own footing using Randy's own idioms from concert dance, ballet, contemporary, what have you.
So are you going to do that with a smaller... orchestra tour?
Smaller, although awfully big for what we've done at Court. The folks at Rodgers and Hammerstein negotiated with us. I'll have 8 musicians, myself included, at Court. And then, having taken our production of Man of La Mancha to the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut, we'll also be taking Carousel out there immediately following. And I'm going to add brass for Long Wharf, so that takes it to 10 for that theater.
Great. Well, Man of La Mancha was just tremendous.
That will probably still be my career highlight for a long time.
Well, I've seen that show overproduced.
Right.
And I've seen that show where it's played so hokey. But the decisions you guys made in that show, from that stunning set to getting some of the great cast. I mean, I don't know how you guys made any money on it. Even if you sold every seat. I mean, you had, a ton of equity actors in it, all the best.
You got Hollis Resnick up there and Susie McMonagle and Harriet Plump. And, you know, actually, we had to recast the show when we took it to Connecticut. And if I can speak for him, both Charlie Newell and I thought the casting, for the most part, was not an improvement. We had some of the best Chicago actors, and Chicago actors take a risk. They bring so much of themselves to the table in a way that some of the New York actors, don't want to make a stereotype, but some of them wait to be told what to do. And the Chicago people were just dying for an experience like this. And that production went so much further than we even dreamed it could have because of the actors we had in it.
Well, Chicago actors are gutsy. And
they're
also no egos. One day you're the star, the next day you're in the ensemble.
Absolutely.
And it's all about the work. And they come and support each other, which I like. I mean, they'll compete like hell to get the role.
That's
true. But if they don't get it, they're there cheering for them. And I got to respect it. So, yeah, that's right. You were the Man of the Month. How was it received out east?
They loved it. They absolutely loved it. And, you know, for a Court audience, they're used to Charlie Newell's work. By now, they're used to my work. It was a great production, but it wasn't that much of a surprise. They knew we could do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Long Wharf, they'd only ever done a couple musicals before, and they'd been pretty traditional. So they were pretty shocked by
something like this. You did the same basic set.
Same basic set, same basic concept. We just changed some things. We improved some things. Members of the Court board saw the production, and the best possible compliment they could have said was, not only is the production better, but Hollis Resnick and Herbert Perry are even better than they were before.
And they were great, yeah.
And they were great, and they just grew in their chemistry together, and Herbert and his command of spoken text grew a lot. So that was exciting to keep the journey going for that piece.
Well, I like what you did with Guys and Dolls.
Me too. Thank you. That was so much fun.
And I took a friend of mine who, that's her favorite show, and she's seen all the great productions of it, including the tour that came through with Nathan Lane about 10 years ago, which was excellent. And it is. It's a good, big, you know, colorful piece. But I think it's legitimate to be able to make these into chamber pieces. Because if the material is strong enough, it'll hold up. And your decision of the jazz band, the little quartet on stage, Did you do all the orchestrations?
I did.
For that?
I did. And it was a type of music I didn't have that much experience with at the time. And just working with these brilliant musicians that I was lucky enough to hire, I know that I grew as a jazz musician in that experience.
Well, we need more jazz shows, so get into
that. It's great, and I love doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it was the sort of production that I think is probably the most critically split piece I've done in my career. Some people loved it, some people were disgusted by it.
Well,
which means we did something interesting with the piece, which I'm proud of.
Yeah, because it's legitimate. And mm-hmm. and just like they before that, they did the two piano My Fair Lady that Gary Griffin did.
Of course.
And I love My Fair. I love the big productions of it, but I think it's legit to do that. It's a gamble.
It's a gamble. What I like about it is it really puts a focus on the material,
right.
especially the score. And a bad score truly will not work under those circumstances, and a good score will. A good score, if the melody is interesting enough.
Of course, it helped having, and it was fun to see so many great classical Shakespearean actors playing gangsters
seeing
and things.
Lance
having
Baker
fun.
Up there and Scott Parkinson. Yeah,
right.
These guys are so great.
And they did a great job. I mean,
sure.
and they were... Scott told me he was scared to death of it because it was his first musical.
He was, and there he is opposite Heidi Kettenring, who's an expert in musicals, but they both learn from each other. They're still good friends. And
oh, that's cool.
Had a good time.
So that had to... So let's go back to your background.
Sure.
You're a Northwestern guy.
I'm a Northwestern grad. My dad actually teaches at Northwestern, so I'm a Northwestern lifer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What does he teach?
He's the head of the magazine journalism program there.
Oh,
which is a very proud thing for me to have a parent on the faculty there.
Yeah, that helps. You know, you just can't open up a playbill and not have somebody from Northwestern involved. I mean, it's incredible.
It's a great feeder, and I always tell people it's a great shorthand to having connections in town, because there's people like Dominic Massimi at the school who just are so eager and so kind to hook you up with connections.
Assuming you have the talent.
Assuming, of course, but that's just...
I mean, I go see the big musicals, and I've told a lot of people they're as good, if not better, than most of the tours that come through.
There's so much money at the school, thank God, because they're so generous in the program. You know, I've done Titanic twice, and I did it first at Northwestern with...
That was better than the tour. That's one.
Absolutely.
Okay,
and then I got to recreate that production at Wagon Wheel in Indiana, where I did five seasons of Summer Stock, which I call my grad school, being down there of, you know, conducting six shows a season.
I haven't been there in years, but I heard they did some pretty good work there.
I loved it. Some of my major career highlights, I did a production of Kiss Me, Kate down there that was as good as anything you'd see in town. We did a spectacular Cats down there. We did Pirates of Penzance. These great shows that now when I do them in my professional career, I've already done them. So it's not, I'm not learning a score. I'm recreating work and making it even better the second time.
Yeah, and you keep, I'm sure you keep all the notes and orchestration.
You should see my back porch. It's a library of all the scores I've ever conducted.
That's terrific. So, I'm looking. Oh, you did at Court the Dead, the Irish play.
Yes.
Which I loved. They did it a couple of years
I did
row.
The second year.
The second
year. And what was so great about Charlie Newell, and it was, I believe it was eight returning actors and five new actors, including my friends Ann Whitney and Penny Slusher, some of the great
That's
character
true.
Actresses in town
two
now.
Of the best,
And they were so great about not only welcoming us as not the new kids, but just vital ways to make the piece even better. And people like Paul Escrofano and John Rieger, who were returning, really took direction very well and thought, you know, there was something I didn't really know how to do last year, and I'm a pro, I faked it.
Yeah, it was a little tighter.
I thought so, My friend Steve Wallum really grew in that second year in the
terrific,
production.
Yeah.
He's got the best voice.
Yeah. But that you were now dealing with traditional Irish music, which was totally different.
Something I knew nothing about, and I quickly researched
and
it.
I'm a real, you know, that's one of my traditions.
Of course.
I had a lot of Irish people there, and they would have thought you were Irish.
Oh, I love it.
which is
that's
what
a big compliment. Thank you.
Somebody needs to remount that show.
Well, it's, you know what? We at the Court have been talking about it
because
it's still one of the biggest financial hits the Court's ever had. And it feels like, you know, of course, Court Theater is the theater that would do that at the Christmas time because it takes place on Christmas Eve party.
Right.
And it'll come back within the next couple of years, I'm pretty certain.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we'll do it
because,
again.
Because, that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Okay, now, you're an arranger. You're an orchestrator, you're a conductor, you're a pianist. How about composer?
You know what? That's an interesting question. I feel like the world is pushing me into that. I have so much reverence for composers and songwriters that it would be very audacious for me to call myself that. And it doesn't quite feel right. How that said, when we did a production of Raisin at Court Theater last year, I wrote the opening number.
Oh, did you?
It was the
I didn't
it
know
originally
that.
Opened.
Wasn't it? I don't think it was it in the credits?
No, and we didn't. We weren't
pretty
you
well
can't
read
legally credit it that way. But originally, it opened with the Harlem Drug Ballet, is what Ernestine Jackson said. They called it in rehearsals for the original production, a real sort of fake West Side Story scene with pushers and prostitutes, and we didn't think that really honored the spirit of Lorraine Hansberry's play anymore. So I took the Langston Hughes poem, What Happens to a Dream Deferred, Does It Dry Up, whatever, and paired it with the gospel spiritual No Ways Tired, and did my own setting of the two and put it together, and it made a great opening number.
Yeah, because I wasn't a great score, and my thing of it was, you know, if you're going to make it sing,
right,
really make it sing.
My friend Michael Weber said, I really like that one song. And I said, I hate to tell you, that's the song I wrote.
Yeah. And that's real. I think if I remember correctly, I only liked one song. I just didn't think it sang. I think it didn't do service to such a great play.
That's a score that was hard to pull out of the moment in which it was written.
But that's terrific. I didn't know you did that.
Yeah.
So if someone were to present you with a book and even some lyrics and say, we need like Moriets, when he got the call about to save...
Grand Hotel, right.
Yeah, Grand Hotel. Yeah. You know, literally he told me that story. He said he wanted to save it. So would you be open to that?
I would be open to it. It would take arm twisting and it would take, you know, confidence boosting. But I'm sure my career will go in that direction at some point.
Yeah, but that's cool that you don't necessarily think of yourself in that. Because the problem I know when people do a lot of composing, then when they do orchestrations and that, they kind of want to make all the material theirs instead of doing what, you know, the writer wanted, the composer wanted to do, especially if he's dead. You know?
Right. Yeah. Moriess is actually someone who I deeply admire, as one of my favorite composers, because I think you listen from one Moriess show to the next, and he has his own voice as a composer, but it's a musical world that you can't confuse from show to show. As brilliant as Sondheim is, sometimes you can take a song from Company and put it in a Merrily We Roll Along. For me, Moriestin, a song from Nine will not work in Titanic, will not work in Phantom.
Well, make sure you come around when Walter does Nine again, because he's coming in. And I've interviewed... What a great guy. I mean, here's a guy, 2 Tony Awards, and he's crawling on the ground plugging in my recorder.
God bless him.
Yeah,
and I love his music.
Just... so promotional. He was so supportive when he went and saw Phantom.
And as a pianist and a singer and a conductor, his music is some of the most gratifying. You can really sink your teeth into it.
That's what I know some of the cast members of Phantom, that's what they were saying.
Absolutely.
That well, that's cool. All right, what do you have coming up now?
My next show after I Do, which I'm so proud to say I get to conduct every performance of. I'm not missing any shows. I'm here till the end of the run.
Great.
It's me and my friend Sandy Lind and Heidi and Steph till the very end of the run, so everybody should come on down and see it.
Anyway, when is it? It goes to what?
Till November 11th. November 11th.
Okay.
Then after that, Heidi and I stay together for Little Women at the Marriott, which I'm very excited. It's a beautiful score.
Yes, it is.
Joe Leonardo is now directing that production, so that's going to be great.
Yeah, Paul Scrofano did drop out, I heard.
Dominic is, but he's recovering and he's going to be great too.
Oh, so is he?
He'll be back for Les Mis.
Oh, okay, good. Because we were worried about it. Thank you. He's going to be back.
He's under great care, and he'll be totally fine for Les Mis.
Oh, right, great. That's good news.
And then after Little Women, I go into a little bit of double duty to the Remount Fiorello, and for Carousel at Court Theater, we're bringing Ernestine Jackson back to play Nettie, and we've got a fabulous cast going for that, so it's going to be really thrilling.
Wow. So you get a not a bad year going.
No. Oh, and then after that, I get to do Full Monty at the Marriott, which I'm really looking forward to. So that I'm blessed to say that takes me through the fall. So I'm got my schedule down.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So in between, you might tinker around with a few songs. Huh?
I think if you give me some suggestions, I might. Absolutely.
Well, I know a couple of people actually have some scores, and we'll definitely get to you because
that'd be fun.
I mean, there are very few. Young guy, and you're a young guy.
I am.
I'm not going to ask you your age, but I would venture to say that you're still in your 20s.
I am still in my 20s.
Okay,
yeah.
To have this kind of background, this is.
I've
fabulous.
Been very blessed. Where it comes from for me, and I would be remiss to end this without mentioning it. I went to Interlochen Arts Camp for 9 summers from the age of 10 to the age of 19, and they treated us as professionals there, not as kids. So at the age of 14, I was coaching Gilbert and Sullivan, and I was accompanying voice studios. And so that's why, even though I'm chronologically young, I don't feel like the baby in the room anymore. I feel like a pro on the level of everybody I'm working with, and everyone treats me that way. And it's very much due to how we were treated as kids there.
And it's due to talent. So don't play it on your talent. You made good judges.
I'm modest.
And you understand the roles. Well, this has been terrific.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work. I'll have a good thought for you. And maybe you'll have to dust off a spot on your on your mantle for another award. I mean, All Night Strutter or Shenandoah, boy, either one is certainly deserved.
And I'm honored I get to perform with both shows at the Jeff Awards at the very least.
Great.
That'll be really fun to revisit those shows.
Okay. Thank you, folks. And thank you for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Mote, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of October 22nd, 2007. Beginning at 10 o'clock in the morning on the day of every performance of Jersey Boys, 10 front row seats will be available for just $25 at the LaSalle Bank Theater box office, and as many as 40 additional seats will be available for select performances. This, of course, is the special rush ticket offer that began last Tuesday. Now, a couple of things to take into consideration. There is a 2-ticket limit per patron, and the tickets are only available to purchase in person at the LaSalle Bank Theater box office, and of course, you must pay cash. They will only be accepting cash. Jersey Boys, which is the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, is currently playing at the LaSalle Bank Theater through April 13th of next year. For your chance to get the special rush ticket offers, just be at the LaSalle Bank Theater box office at 10 a.m. the day of the performance. Well, as you already may know, the House Theater of Chicago had recently announced that they will no longer be performing at the Viaduct Theater. While the Viaduct's owner, Whitney Blakemore, told the Sun-Times that the relationship between the Viaduct and the House was not fairly represented. The Viaduct's cavernous space will in fact still be used as a theater, with bookings for plays and dance performances already made through next season. The Viaduct had also told the Sun-Times that they had already scheduled the House Theater's production of The Nutcracker in the space for the holiday season, but then the House canceled after Steppenwolf offered them their space. The Viaduct would in fact be happy to have the House Theater of Chicago back with them if they were willing to commit to a full season. The House Theater of Chicago is obviously going through a transformation this year. It is considering options for a new space. Their commercial hit The Sparrow is now running at the Apollo Theater, where it will stay through New Year's Eve. And as mentioned earlier, they will be performing their version of The Nutcracker at the Steppenwolf Theater. The current run of the House's The Magnificence will have its final show at the Viaduct on November 3rd. Nilaja Sun's one-woman show, No Child, now playing at the Looking Glass Theater's Water Tower Waterworks Place, has adjusted its performances to meet Nilaja Sun's schedule. The show is now set to close on November 4th, 1 week earlier than anticipated. If you are currently holding tickets for No Child's last week, which is November 7th through the 11th, you should definitely call the Looking Glass box office at 312-337-0665. Again, that's 312-337-0665 to reschedule your tickets. Nilaja Sun's No Child has added a performance on October 30th to facilitate the change, so be sure you call the box office as soon as you can. This is just a reminder that the 39th annual Jeff Award ceremony will be held next Monday, October 29th, at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. Nicely enough, there is a pre-show appetizer buffet and martini bar that starts at 6 o'clock. The award ceremony begins at 7:30. You can purchase advance tickets for the awards and pre-show buffet. They are only $65. The evening is black tie optional, and of course, Chicago audiences are cordially invited to attend. For more information on how to purchase tickets, visit the Jeff Awards website at jeffawards.org. Again, that's www.jeffawards.org. Well, thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare quote of the week. The following quote comes from The Two Gentlemen of Verona, Act 2. Scene 4. His years but young, but his experience old. And that wraps up another week of theater newsiness. We will talk again next week. Until then, that is Chicago's theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago. And I'm Dustin Mote. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Doug Peck for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And, of course, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next week, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.